بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. Peace and love everybody. I'm Brother Ali. It's the Travelers Podcast. I am on tour right now with the Grouch and Living Legends, which is why I'm talking in the earpiece, not on my podcast mic. You're seeing a not the flyest hotel room behind me. I'm an independent artist. And then like sometimes we're in really beautiful hotels. Actually, the older we get, the more beautiful the hotels get. Like we prioritize that more and more, just mostly for comfort and health. You realize like sometimes you get in a grimy hotel, you can save a little money, but like you start smelling that mildew and it's just like, man, this can make me sick. You know what I'm saying? And my body is what I need the most when I'm on tour. So a lot of nights it'd be a little nicer hotels. Today, this is what we're at. So it just is what it is. And I'm grateful, man. I'm grateful to have a warm place to lay my head. Grateful to have a place to, you know, pack my bag and take a shower. And a lot of people don't have that right now. So I'm very, very grateful. I'm on tour with the Grouch and Living Legends and Reverie and DJ Fresh. And the tour has been dope. Go to brotherali.com in the events section. You'll be able to check that out. And yeah, we did Seattle, Portland, Bend, Oregon, and Boise, Idaho. So it was a nice first week. Now we have a couple of days off. I'm currently in Santa Cruz. So we do Santa Cruz, and then we keep on rocking all the way until a couple of day or two before Christmas. We end this in L.A. Muhammad Ali's daughter, Mehmeh Ali, sent me a message. She was like, yo, the concert looks dope. If you haven't heard our conversation with Muhammad Ali's daughter, Mehmeh Ali, Maryam Ali, check that out. She's a rapper. She's an MC. So I reached out to her and I was like, yo, will you please come and spit something on stage in LA when we get to LA? She sent me voice notes. I haven't listened to them yet. So if you pray for that. I'm amidst a million other things that need to be prayed for at the moment. But so we do those shows, and then we have a couple of days off, and then we have three shows with me and Eli and the Grouch in Colorado around New Year's. And then I have a few days off, and then on January the 6th of all days, I'll be playing a festival or a concert series in Florida called the Rise Up Music Festival with Atmosphere and Sa Rock and RJD2 and Soul Messiah and some others. So that's my run of shows. Go to brotherali.com, check out all those dates. Also, the Muslims don't have a holiday this time, this year, at this particular period, but a lot of people are giving gifts, and I know what it means to people to give gifts. And so on brotherali.com, in the merchandise section, if you go to that section on my website, everything's on sale. I just put everything on sale because I love the fact that people share my music with each other. Even if you just want to get yourself a gift, you can. So there, all the music is there. And there are things like the podcast merchandise is there, like the shirts for the podcast. There's like crew neck sweatshirts. There's cassettes and vinyl. And also, last year I did commemorative stuff for Uncle Sam Goddamn. There's a jacket, a dope jacket, and some shirts that say, "Welcome to the United Snakes, Land of the Thief, Home of the Slaves," for the 15-year anniversary. I thought that stuff was sold out. We took it on tour with us and sold a bunch of it, sold a bunch on the website. When you come back from tour, sometimes there'll be like, a crate of stuff. It turns out we have some of those left still. And so those are on the website now, and they're all deeply, deeply discounted. All kind of stuff there. So check it out. This week on the podcast, the guest is artist by the name D1. D1 is from New Orleans. He's a Christian artist who, came up in the hood in New Orleans, and he had a life-changing, transformative experience in college where he was playing basketball. And some people came out because there was somebody tried to break into a car, I think is what happened. And they came and they said, "Hey, did you guys try to break in our car?" And they're like, "No, we're playing basketball." And these guys pulled out a gun and put it to D's head. And he thought that he was going to die. I also have had a gun put to my head more than once and thought I was going to die. One of the times it was a police officer. And so I relate very deeply to that experience. And so that was a life-changing thing for him. He's made incredible music for a long time. He has a brand new album called From the Hood to Harvard. And it's for sale on his website. Go to d1music.com and check that out. And he has a crowd pricing thing where you can pay what you want. So you decide what you want to pay for the album. And somebody just came through and dropped $1,000 for D1's album. What in this particular moment, he's always been a person that's very outspoken. And in this particular moment, we just passed kind of a period where D1 was speaking to one of the other, I would say the most prominent Christian hip hop artist is a man by the name of Lecrae. And Lecrae had a campaign that D1 didn't agree with. And so he very lovingly, but also very specifically, spoke publicly to Lecrae about it. Some would even say he called him out. And there was a conversation that happened in the world of Christian music and in urban Christian music and Black Christian music in the Christian hip hop scene that happened there. And recently, D1 had a program where he was giving out, I believe it was shoes. I think he was giving out sneakers. And he chose to give out sneakers that were associated with Meek Mill, because Meek Mill has been somebody that's been talking about prison reform. Meek Mill and Rick Ross and Jim Jones. I haven't heard the song. I don't always keep abreast of all the things that are going on. I just listen to the things that I feel like are for me. But there's a song that they made that was talking about violence, street violence. And so D1 was on Sway's show, and he said, "Meek Mill, Rick Ross, and Jim Jones, I love you. You can do better than this. You are men that are powerful in the music industry. You've been making music for a long time. You all have had po positive messages at some point. Why are we still glorifying violence?" Within a matter of hours or days, all three of them responded to D1 in ways that were insinuating the possibility of violence at the very least. All of this as his album comes out. So I met D1 about 10 years ago, and he's one of those people that, as happens, you hear it probably a lot on this podcast. There's people that I met once, or that I felt like we knew each other, or that we did know each other because of what we have in common. And so, D is somebody that he has an album with Merce, who's a really dear mutual friend of us both. We're in a lot of the same circles. And I just love him and I admire him. And I appreciate the fact that, excuse me, he takes the stands that he takes. And I know what it means to take those kind of stands. And so very grateful to have him on the podcast, I hope one of the things that you hear too is that I don't have to completely agree with everything that somebody says or does. Or, theologically, D is Christian and I'm Muslim. But the fact that we both are rooted in our traditions, the fact that we both have a spiritual base. Also, there's something about the fact that his Christianity is Black Christianity, and my orientation in Islam is through Black American Islam. Those are experiences and communities that just have a lot of great overlap. And so I'm really grateful to be talking to D1. The Travelers Podcast is brought to you by The Caravan. Go to brotherali.com in the join section. You see what's up with the caravan. We're supported by people who show up and make sure that we have a platform and make sure that we're supported, and we're grateful for that. We're also brought to you by the Zakat Foundation, Zakat. Zakat.org is their website. Zakat US is how you follow them on social media. Global humanitarian organization that does great things for people all over the world. So we're grateful for our sponsors, our supporters. Grateful to D1 for being here. Grateful for you. Grateful to you for being here. Enjoy this episode of the Travelers Podcast with D1. Man, I'm so grateful for you doing this, man. I know this is like such a crazy time for you between releasing the new record and everything. How you feeling?
I feel amazing. I do, because one thing that I reflected on right before logging on was I'm just being myself and I'm being who I have been my entire adult life. So when the world starts to either take notice to who you are or what you're doing or what you're saying, And when you realize, like, I don't know how to not be this way. This is who I've been. This is who I'll continue to be, with confidence, but also with humility. At that point, it doesn't become something that that feels like I have to get in character every day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the same dude. I'm the same dude that came to your New Orleans show at the House of Blues in the Parish Room, dapping you off backstage. Like, brother, it's so great to meet you. Like, I'm still him, bro, to the fullest.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say at the outset, man, I'm really grateful for you, and I'm proud of you, and that I'm with you, because I know what it means to be the person asking the question that nobody wants asked.
Mm.
And really, at the end of the day, that's what I see you doing in this moment, is just like, okay, yes, all right, everyone's doing their thing, everybody's doing what they feel called to do and what they're good at doing, and you know, but there are certain priorities that get pushed to the back. There are certain things that get pushed to the front, and then certain things that get pushed to the back. And to ask a question as simple as, okay, but what about the people that are hearing this? What about what's right? What about, you know, the message of this music? What about the way that it's impacting children and women and men and you know, people that have been traumatized? What about the way that this is sitting on our heart? What about the way that this looks to God? What about thinking about what we're saying? Like, that question alone, it seems like one that should be asked, but man, you know when you're asking the dangerous question when you see the response. Mm-hmm. Like, when the question is so loving and the response is so violent, you know what I'm saying? I relate to that, man. I relate to that deeply in my soul, because I also... I'm somebody that can't, I have to ask that question. You know what I'm saying? So for you to be asking that question and to be getting the response that you're getting, I'm just so grateful for you and to you. And I have so much love and admiration, and I relate so deeply. So, man, I just want to start with saying thank you for that.
Brother, I'm truly humbled to hear you say that, because I know that I definitely stand on the shoulders of many amazing men and women who have come before me that have had the courage to speak from a place of love, but also a place of conviction and what I would call a place of proper priorities in life. Because I don't think that anything that any hip hop artists are seeking after, like money. I don't think money is inherently evil. It's all about your relationship with money, mm-hmm. and understanding, are you putting money before morals, you know? And if so, okay, is that maybe something that we could reassess? Is that something to look at differently? And me being in this industry, I know that there's a lot of people who have struggled with existing in this industry, because it seems as if, hey, I don't fully fit in, because what the industry wants promoted and glorified, that isn't my mission. So then you find that they say, oh, you're one of those people that's different. We have a nice little corner over here for you. Right. We got this little corner, this little corner category for all of y'all, you know, message-driven artists. Here you go. Like, y'all exist here. And then when you're like, no, but if this industry is truly about talent, and if it's about ability to be able to relate to people and having a heart for wanting to be an agent of positive change in this world via this art form that we call hip hop, then I shouldn't have to be confined to just speaking what I'm speaking amongst a bunch of other people who are going to agree with it. It's like, I have love for people who are not in this box. Like, I have love for my brothers and sisters that are everywhere in this industry, so much so that I don't mind having the difficult conversations
with them.
And that's all this is about. And when you realize the response that sometimes comes from even posing these questions, it's almost like, you know what? Let's be real, hip hop. It doesn't matter how I posed these questions. Like,
That's right.
Hip hop was going to have a problem with it in general, you know?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, it's always that way when you just ask that question. So I find myself in a moment where I'm saying, with, I think, a lot of nuance and love, I got a lot of Jewish people in my life. I always have. Like, you know, I when I was a teenager, I was an imam at a mosque. And so, like, I did interfaith work. So much. I've gone through this thing over and over again. So very religious Jewish people, creative Jewish people, people in the industry. But the question is, so it's like, okay, so the desire to be safe, the desire to not be oppressed, the desire to not be tormented, and, you know, it is all very real. Like, yes. The question, though, is what about the Palestinians, though? That's all. Just what about the Palestinians? With love, lovingly, what about them? You know what I mean? What about them? And to ask a question like that, and even when you try to, like, okay, there are people that might voice these things in ways that are anti-Semitic, but that's not me. You know what I mean? And I've had the same thing when the war was happening. You know what I'm saying? Like when we were talking about the Iraq-Afghanistan war, to just be saying, okay, but how does that, can we have a conversation about this? Like, man, once you see that it almost doesn't matter the level of nuance. Like I said, when you came into this conversation with the three men specifically that you pointed out, you came at that with such love and the statement that, like, you could do better. Like, I believe you are better than the words coming out of your mouth. You know what I'm saying? I believe you're better than this particular message. I believe that you as a human being are capable of more than this. You know what I mean? It's such a loving message. And the fact that two of the three of them, and maybe the third one did, threatened you. You know what I'm saying? Within days. Like, man, they responded by, like, okay, let's threaten D now. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like you see how people end up jumping all the way out the window and just going full Rambo with the whole situation. You see how somebody, you see how the more extreme voices get to be what they are. Because at some point it's like, man, it doesn't matter what level of nuance and love that I come into this with. Just by disrupting the sleeping at all, like, we got to pretend that there's this whole industry where people are say that they're bosses, where people are talking about, I'm a mogul, I'm a boss, I'm my own man, I can do whatever I want. Okay, but can you really? And if you can do whatever you want, like, can there be some, you know what I'm saying? Can there be some nuance to this conversation? Like, man, you just see, it doesn't matter how nuanced you are. So the nuance going forward for us, I'm like, man, it's just going to be my own loving heart and my relationship with God that's going to keep me loving. Because I might as well just come in with the pit, with my own Uzi out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm supposed to phrase these as questions.
Right.
But, like, nah. But I just feel you. Like, I see this, man. And it's like, man, you know, the level of nuance just doesn't even matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. If we're honest about it, it doesn't. And what I really don't appreciate is when people, you know, just to put a name out there, when somebody like a Joe Budden, for example, comes in and inserts himself into the conversation and tries to tell me how to go about doing what I'm doing. It's like, my brother, with all due respect, you and I are not the same. We have two totally different missions for why we are in this game as creators and as commentators on the culture. You know, I'm not just doing this for clicks. I don't make a living out of sitting back and just critiquing or giving a hot take or spicy take on what's going on in the lives of other celebrities. I got into this game as an educator. I got into this game as a man of God who understands that I've been blessed to be a very high level rapper, so I can get into hip hop and express myself through music. But since I'm in this industry and occupying real estate here, let me also speak on the neighborhood that I'm in. Like, I just bought a house here. Let me speak on the neighborhood that I live in and being like, whoa, we could do some different things to make this neighborhood better for everyone that's here and everyone that's going to be here in the future. And that's all I'm doing. So when I have people who try to tell me how to go about doing what I'm doing, what they don't realize is, like, I don't look up to a person like a Joe Budden. You know, that's not disrespect when I say that. That's just a fact. Like, I don't look up to certain people who I understand have a different set of life priorities than I do, and priorities in this industry than I do, it makes it to where I'm just listening and I'm like, man, I see that you're speaking from a place of being broken as well. And you're speaking from a place of wanting to wanting to try to micromanage how change agents like myself go about doing God's work. And you may minimize it, you may laugh at it, you may say, you know, just comments that I heard people saying, like, oh, some people just want to be the martyr, you know, like having commentary on the lyrical content of some of the OGs inside of this industry, who I feel like any elders, we should be the people who are setting the standard and setting the bar for the youngsters to look up to and to you know, be able to take some words of wisdom from and take some positive attributes from. That's all I'm saying. And to be, you know, to have that stuff worded like, oh yeah, some people just basically they just want to be martyrs, or they want to go out, you know, like just saying this type of stuff. It's like there's no part of me that's fearful. I say that much. There's no part of me that's fearful. I sleep with a lot of peace at night. I do know that although I may be unpopular in some people's mind, to me there's street approval that some people are living for, approval from the streets. There's worldly approval that some people are living for, which is approval from anything that's worldly, industries of the world, other people of the world. And then there's godly approval that you're living for. And I'm living for that godly approval. And sometimes living for godly approval may contradict from what will get you approval from the streets or from the world. And I'm at peace with that.
Man, I feel you so supremely. It's interesting, like, some people could say that the word Islam could be translated as godly approval. You know what I mean? Like seeking the approval of God. You know, it's interesting that you bring up a Budden, because I've always been cool with Budden, you know, and he's always really like kind of championed me in a really strange way. Like he'll just shout me out when there's no reason to. And what's interesting to me about Budden in particular is like, I feel like on some level, there's a part of him that's close to us, that is connected to us. Because when I look at his own struggle, it's been a struggle for him. It doesn't look like it, but I identify with him as a person who struggled, because the music that he really wanted to make, when you look at mood music, like he wanted to make music about his pain, about his trauma, about his grief, about his own mistakes, the music that he made when he really had more space to do it was really about what was going on in his heart. You know what I mean? He might not have filtered it directly through something social or something necessarily overtly spiritual, but he was saying things in his music that there wasn't necessarily space for. And when I look at him and he's like, okay, he came out and made this whole album, and they're like, okay, you need a hit though. So he made Pump It Up to have a hit record, and it worked. And then the whole time that there's always been this like, and that wasn't his favorite record. And now people clown him for that record. You know what I mean? It's like, that's your only hit. That's your only other time that you've, but I think deep down, he's an MC, like he's an artist. Like he's a creative person that wants to sing about his soul. And then you look at his whole trajectory since then, I think he's always been acutely aware of, you know, the whole time that he was doing his independent career, he still had Joe Budden TV. You know what I mean? And so like, I'm hearing this amazing music and I'm relating to the music as an artist. But then when I look at what he's doing to keep his name out there, I don't want to see his girlfriend's backside. You know what I mean? But it's like, there's a lot of that. And a lot of those clicks are because of T, drama. You know, he called out Raekwon or he called out some people in Wu-Tang maybe. I know there was a thing with Wu-Tang that happened where he was actually in a violent altercation with those brothers, you know?
Unfortunately.
And, you know, and so then I look at also Budden stepping out and making music and saying, I'm just going to do this podcast thing. What I see in somebody like him is like, man, he knows what that struggle is on some level. You know what I mean? And he understood that like me pouring my heart out and making amazing music isn't going to get me what I'm trying to get out of this. And ultimately, I wonder if his own, I know that his own path has to be the filter through which he's viewing you. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Yes. That's amazing insight. And because his past is the filter in which he's viewing me, I think he's not doing the due diligence to see that I've been successful for quite a long time. By the grace of God, in this industry, by being me the whole time. Yeah. So when he was putting out Mood Music 3, I was a middle school teacher, you know, and I was educating the youth, teaching in the hood back in Louisiana, and making a difference back then, and then venturing out to become an artist, but saying, I'm going to keep this same energy that I had as Mr. Augustine, the middle school teacher, and I'm going to transfer that energy into being D1. And now, as you can see on the board behind me, D1 has become Professor Augustine, Professor Uno, Professor D1, because now I'm on a college campus. I'm at Tufts University teaching the intersection of hip hop and social change, because my career thus far has been a decade plus of me being an example of how to make hip hop, how to be true to your morals and your convictions, but how to tie that music into making actual social change successfully. Like, I'm not a struggling artist. I say that humbly by the grace of God. And that is something to where there's either a level of ignorance when it comes to that by people like our brother Joe, to where he's just unaware and didn't, you know, do his Googles. Like they say on the East Coast, do your Googles. You know what I mean? It's either not knowing that, or it's feeling like, well, that doesn't count. Like, because once again, you're just in that box, D. So stay in that box, because what you're looking to do now is going to wake up some of the sleeping giants. And that is, whatever it is, Brother Ali, when I say this from the bottom of my heart, when I'm shining my light and when my light is irritating others, I feel like it's just irritating the demons that exist inside of other people. That doesn't mean that those individuals are demons, but we all have demons that can exist and can work through us. Like the word says in Ephesians 6 and 12, we're not battling against flesh and blood. So I have never seen a human being in my life who I look at and I say, that's my op. That's my energy. I don't care what country they're from. I don't care what background they have. The brother who stole my girlfriend in college and straight took her from me, the football player. I saw this brother in New Orleans a few months ago. I was at the New Orleans Pelicans basketball game, went and dapped that brother off and embraced him, you know, and he was like, brother, you're doing your thing out here. Let me get your autograph. And I'm just like, ain't this a full circle moment? You stole my girl in college and now we dapping each other off and you asking me for an autograph. I don't care if it's that. I don't care if it's the brothers who held a gun to my head when I was in college and were threatening to kill me, you know, amidst an armed robbery. I don't look at people as being my ops or my enemies. I truly don't. And because of that, I can just look at, if I know that I'm moving out of love and out of a place of truly having like peace and wanting to just make this world better, not just for me, like make this world better for others who will come after us. And if that's irritating people, it's just irritating the demons that are working inside of, you know, certain people. And I have demons that I'm sure are constantly trying to get control of my thoughts and my words and my actions as well. Yeah. So I know that it's a real thing. It's a real spiritual war out here. And that's why I'm just like, I don't feel like I'm I don't feel like I'm moving out of turn, so to say, just by seeking to shine light in an industry where so much darkness is celebrated and accepted. That's the issue. We live in and we exist in an industry where I would be hard pressed to find another industry on this planet that overtly glorifies so much darkness and it hides behind a curtain called it's entertainment. Oh, it's just entertainment. So that gives it an excuse, you know, for all of the negative messaging and everything. And in this industry, you can either run from it, you can get disenchanted with it and say, nah, it's just too dark over there. Or you can be, you know, you can be a soldier in God's army and you can say, sign me up, put me on the front line, and I'm gonna do my best for as long as God has me here to bring some light to it. Thank you.
It makes a lot of sense. We talk about therapy almost every week on this show because the people that have been through therapy are ready to talk. They know how to do it. Me and BK, the producer of the podcast, we talk about this all the time. Guests that have been in therapy, it's like, this is going to be a dope episode because they're ready to go. You know what I'm saying? So it's really beautiful. This is the season of life when we have the opportunity and really the responsibility to sit with ourselves and to really find out what's going on in there and to give ourselves the time and the opportunity to just explore it. Therapy is not like it looks in the movies where you sit and lay on the couch and they tell you all this stuff about yourself. It's really an opportunity for us to talk through all of these experiences we've had and the thoughts and meanings and narratives that we've formed around this stuff. And every week I talk about different reasons to do it. I hope this one doesn't feel too heavy. But if you haven't done therapy, think about doing it for your kids. Think about the fact that a lot of what's going on with us, a lot of the areas where we're broken or incomplete or in need of healing and attention, a lot of that stuff came from our parents. And very few of our parents are sociopaths that just want to abuse their children and neglect their children and scar them for life. But they had stuff going on inside of them that they didn't get to address. They didn't get to heal. And so they were doing their best, but they say hurt people hurt people. And it doesn't always have to be that way. Sometimes hurt people heal people. Sometimes hurt people learn about their hurt and they don't have to repeat those cycles. But it's really important for us, for our own sake and also for the sake of the people that we love, to take some time to talk through it with a therapist. BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/travelers is the website that you can go to. You know, I need therapy like everybody else. I think we should all be in therapy. That's just what I believe. And the people that I know that have never done therapy, it's like, man, I hope you get on board. They all know how I feel. And they keep ignoring it. And I keep on like, man, you just can't make somebody else do it. People are going to do it when they're ready. But go to betterhelp.com/travelers. That's what I do because I don't have a job and I don't live in America. So if you've got barriers to mental health and mental health services, this is a great way to do it. But it'll take you to a questionnaire. You're completely in the driver's seat. You tell them what you're looking for. You decide, you pick your own therapist. You choose how you're going to meet and connect with each other. And then you start doing it on your own terms. If you ever want to change your therapist, you just change them. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you find somebody you vibe with. Make sure you find somebody that you feel like this is somebody that's going to be able to accompany me and help guide me along this journey of me discovering myself. They're not going to give me the answers. They're going to help me find my own answers. That's what great therapists do. So if you go to betterhelp.com/travelers, you'll get a discount. We also get a commission to help the work that we do here. And it's a win-win for everybody.
When folks critique and say, you're not doing it right, like we're not doing it the right way, it's like, okay, show me the examples of people that are doing it the way that you think they should do it. Like, who are the artists that are raising, a counterbalance to all of this stuff? You know what I mean? Like, you and I both grew up in a time, I think I'm a few years older than you, but neither one of us are 20. Mm-hmm. Like, but when we were growing up, like, one of the things that I loved, it's like before the music industry really got a hold of hip hop and the Black community and hip hop culture was still more in the driver's seat and the business a little bit more. It's like you could see all parts of life in the music. So there was street music, but I didn't feel like Scarface was glorifying stuff. Like Scarface talked about the pain of what it's really like to live this life. There's exciting moments. You know what I'm saying? There's funny, there's hilarious stuff that happens. It's fun when you have money. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's fun to get away with stuff. But he also talked about the depression and the darkness and even Ice-T and certain others. And then there was a moment, you know, and then there was also very conscious music that was like all these people were on tour together. Public Enemy and NWA and Scott and the Ghetto Boys and Kid and Play and all these people were on tour together. You know, Queen Latifah and, you know, MC Light, the whole family. And then it was very clear that like there was a decision that was made once the big major music industry got involved that like, okay, Public Enemy doesn't really have a place here anymore. Arrested Development doesn't have a place here anymore. But, you know, the End for Life album, that's the album that America needs. You know what I mean? And that's the one that's going to have all this energy in it. And since then, it's like, okay, if this isn't the right way to do it, where are the people that are doing this right? Like, show me who they are.
Exactly.
Because if the answer is nobody, it's like, okay, if not, then how I'm doing it, then what? You know what I'm saying? Because there's always critique. Like, yeah, so there's going to be something flawed about the way that we're bringing this stuff to the table. But, like, where are the voices that are doing it right? You know what I'm saying? Do you have people that you are able to look to that charted the way in a way that you're like, okay, at least I have some kind of blueprint or playbook I can follow?
Well, that's an amazing question. So first, because I feel like it's a two-part question. First, in terms of people who I look to who have shined a light in this industry and come before me, who I thank God for me being able to pull different tidbits from either their journey or their artistry. Oh man, I have to go down a list. Everyone from Speech, from Arrested Development, to Nas, to yourself, to my brother Murs, to Chuck D, Public Enemy, to Flavor Flav, who I have formed a friendship with recently, which has been super unexpected but fruitful friendship, to KRS-One, and so many examples that, you know, that's just five or six examples, but there are so many brothers who I have seen over time. Kanye West, when Kanye West first came out especially, I was like, man, this brother, the College Dropout album, Late Registration, Graduation, those first three albums specifically really, really had a huge impact on me, seeing that you could exist outside of this box in the music industry, mm-hmm. outside of this box, and still have a message and a level of passion and conviction that didn't have to be glorifying murder and drug dealing and disrespecting women. So those are just a few examples of who I have taken different tidbits of inspiration from over time. I will also say that the issue is, Brother Ali, the issue is that some people won't point a brother like me, some of my critics won't point me to examples of who did it better than me and this person's approach was right, that person's approach was right, because the truth is, deep down, these critics just don't want any accountability. Mm. They don't want any accountability, whether it's, hey, I have the right for free speech, whether it's, hey, this industry is paying my bills and feeding my family. So they don't want any accountability. So people who are telling me, once again, when I just listen to, because I would love to have a conversation with a brother like a Joe Budden, for example, because in that conversation, I don't have to be anyone other than I'm being on this interview with you right now. And it's mm-hmm. it's just being straightforward about the fact that if we want accountability, we can't just be speaking in vague terms, you know. And the beautiful part is that when I see people, even on his show, all of his co-hosts come into my defense, all of them saying, we don't think this brother is clout chasing.
Right.
We think that this brother has just given tangible examples to a point that he was making. Because if not, what you have is you just have two different sides and factions that are both speaking about one another, mm-hmm. but never speaking to one another. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly right. So I pray that you know, through God's grace, that I'm able to continue these conversations and ultimately having conversations with individuals that they might feel like, why would D1, you know, D1 doesn't like this type of artist, or he has beef with these. I have beef with no one. And I don't dislike anyone, because right. no matter who the artist is, I guarantee you that we have more. We have my bad. I'm from Louisiana. My bad.
No, do it, man.
Yeah,
I love it. I'm just like, oh man, thank you for that. Thank you for the Creole
all right.
seasoning.
We have more similarities as human beings then we have differences. I promise you that from the bottom of my heart. So it's all about understanding what are those touch points of relatability between us, and then saying, let's use those as an entry point to having conversations. But now when we have conversations where we start to see some of our differences, we can come from a place of no one is feeling attacked. No one is feeling like I'm just trying to belittle them or anything of that nature. And as much as I try to think about, because, you know, certain critics, they do make you self-reflect and say, is there a better way I could be going about this? But honestly, the conclusion I've drawn, Brother Ali, is that some people just do not want to see real change happen. So what they'll do is they'll try to cast me off as a clout chaser to try to minimize my message and the impact that my message can have. Or they'll try to micromanage. If they can't just cast me off as a clout chaser, they'll micromanage how I go about delivering the message. Yeah. And they'll try to micromanage it in a way that they know, oh, that's going to cause it to just go off into no man's land, and it won't ever really become a convo that we have to have. Now what you see is D1 has helped, by the grace of God, to bring this conversation to the forefront of hip-hop culture. Now, simultaneously, you see Fat Joe, another OG, an elder in hip-hop, who I've met him once. He showed me mad love when I met him. He's coming out saying, I've lied in over 95% of my rhymes.
Yeah, I sent you that, remember?
Bro, of course. No, you sent it to me, right? That's what I'm saying. And when I see that, I didn't even reply because I didn't know what to say. I was like, this is...
I thought of you first. I was like, man, yeah, this idea that, like, I'm just reporting on reality. I'm just, what you should change is, like, change the situation in the world, and then we can change what we're saying. You know what I mean? But the reality is, like, but your world has changed. Your world has changed. There's so much beauty in these people's lives. Yes. You know what I mean? There's so much beauty in the lives of the people that are speaking. They live great lives. All of this stuff is going on. So you're telling me that, like, for as powerful as we are, for the moguls that we are, for the bosses that we have, for the people who are so powerful when it comes to, like, I can make a call and get somebody hurt in the hood. I can make a call and get your chain back. Okay. I believe all those things are real. Like, I lived in neighborhoods like that too. But, like, can we also make a call and you know, say that, like, okay, somebody on my platform is going to be able to do this stuff. And I didn't mean to cut you. But I think that for so many of these artists, one of the ways that I try to, like, look at them with compassion is that they also grew up on Chuck D. And they also, when they meet Chuck D or when they meet Minister Farrakhan or when they meet Rakim or KRS or Lauryn Hill, like, I've been in the room with these artists when they've met these people and they're in tears, they're humble, they're kissing them, you know what I mean? I've seen people cry in front of Minister Farrakhan and ask his forgiveness and him say, it's okay, my dear brother.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you know, you've got to try to go, you know, I've seen the love. And when I think about the fact that, so our brother, for example, Rick Ross signed Styli. You know what I mean? Styli looks like you and Styli could be in a group together. Styli could have been in the group with you and Merce. He could have been the Muslim in the group.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And like, there's something in because these people are from this culture as well. Like, there's something in them that I think desired. And at some point, I think that part of them got defeated. You know what I'm saying? Just to feel like they could survive. And when you look at the way that they respond when you talk about messaging, almost all the people in that situation, they tell you about their charity work. Like, I give out turkeys, I give out Pampers, I bail people out of prison, I got rich and gave back to me, that's the win-win. And it's indicative of, and to me that points to something that is beyond their scope, which is, like, we are in an industry that is an extension of slavery, that's part of colonialism, that's part of white supremacy owning and having a major hand and a major say in Black expression that's happened from the very beginning. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is that part of it. And so what I see from them is a combination of, like, man, you're hurting my feelings because there's part of me that knows that what you're saying is right. And I wish that I wish that I could figure out how to do what you're doing. Like, I think that there's something inside of these individuals that see what you're doing. They're like, damn it, man, I wish I could have, I wish I had that. I wish I still was in a place where I could say something like, I know he's right. Mm. You know what I'm saying? There's like, I think you're speaking to something in them that's been defeated. And that's, I think it's, there's a lot of like pain there. You know what I mean?
You know what my message is to those brothers, if that's the case, Brother Ali, is that it's not too late. It's not too late, mm-hmm. brothers. Like I love y'all too much to give up and to say, oh yeah, you're just cast off mm-hmm. as an enemy of light and of love forever. No, brothers, it's not too late. And if I got your attention because of anything that I've said, then understand that my goal is not to defeat you because right. you are not my enemy by any means. And I think that sometimes brothers have cast themselves off because for so long, people have only celebrated them. Yeah. This industry right. that we're in only celebrates the darkest side of their existence and the lowest level of who yeah. they are. Yeah. So if they're in an industry that's like, this industry made me a multimillionaire for celebrating me, glorifying, killing, and drug dealing, and disrespecting these women, then they feel like that's what my identity and my brand is built on. And deep down, if I've been able to speak to their heart and permeate all those layers of success and these layers of becoming characters that may not be indicative of who they are. If I've been able to tap into their heart and their spirit just a little bit, I don't want to take that and utilize that as something that I make fun of and I dangle and say, oh, look at you getting emotional. Look at you getting upset. No, right. It's like, brother, I love this, man. And it's not too late for y'all.
Anyone that's been listening to our music for any length of time, I think you get a sense of the fact that we're making music, but this is also a creative movement that starts with the music. It starts with the relationship between the people who make the music. That relationship then extends to the people that listen to it and support it. And so it's an artistic movement, it's a creative movement, but it's not only about the music. We're looking to create an environment in the music, but also create a little section of the world that reflects what we find to be beautiful and what we find to be right. And so when we brought this music to the world initially, we had record labels at first that were completely ignoring us. But then once they started to see that you were supporting it and that there were people that were responding and that we're filling a need that people didn't even know they had, which is always the case when you share what's really going on inside of you, you find out that what's most personal to you is also most universal, that there are other people that when you share your secrets, they're like, oh man, I have a similar secret to that. And it makes me know that I'm not alone and that connection is really beautiful. But then the record industry wanted to get involved. You know what I'm saying? But it's always been really important to us that this isn't only about music. It's really a creative movement for us to carve out a little section of the world that's about what we believe in. And what's really important going into this next phase, we've been in this thing for many phases, but the phase that we're in now is we're in the era of the algorithm. And the algorithm is programmed by people, but it's there for the same reason that the huge corporations are there, just to get tonnage of human attention, so that they can use that attention to sell their stuff. And that on its own isn't necessarily a bad thing, but what they believe in the section of the world that they've carved out, which is unfortunately all these streaming platforms, they believe that the best way to attract human attention is by promoting the lowest common denominator, the worst of our nature that we all share. We've all got it. We're all petty. We all have opinions. We all like to argue about them. We all get some sense of enjoyment out of judging people. But the research and the data, and even before that, just on a gut level, we could feel that these things are fueling division between people. They're fueling a sense of anger between people, and we don't have any interest in participating in that. This music is about connection. This podcast is about connection. This movement is about connection. It's based on something pure and real and true, and we don't just want to sell it to big corporations, and we don't want to have to make our decisions based on what's going to get a lot of clicks and shares and likes and heat and algorithmic robotic attention and prioritizing. We don't want to do that. The same way that we didn't want to jump into the music industry that was about promoting certain ideas, we're not just trying to feed the machine. And so what we do here is just like our musical movement. It's based on our relationship with you. And so just like you used to go to a show, used to buy a ticket, used to buy a CD and t-shirts, hopefully you still do all that stuff because we're still making dope music. We still throw amazing concerts. I think that the people from my cohort, I think we're at our best point now. Like, this is a resurgence of our type of music, our approach to music. And man, I'm telling you, you go to some of these shows and you listen to some of the music that's being made by the people from our cohort of artists, and it is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. So the way that you support this now, though, is by going to brotherali.com. In the join section, we have something called a caravan. You can jump in at the $5 level. And there's all sorts of ways to connect there. There's Ask Me Anything episodes. People challenge me about stuff. People ask me about my views on things. So we do those regularly. But there is an ever-growing collection of rare and exclusive music and podcast episodes and lectures and talks. There's an oral history of my demo tape called Rites of Passage. You know what I'm saying? Which is just the very, very beginning of my career, where I just sit down and talk through the entire process of making that demo tape. And you can also listen to Rites of Passage there. It's not streaming on any of the streaming services. You can also listen to our mixtapes. There's all sorts of stuff there that you can't find anywhere else, along with exclusive stuff. Speaking of great new music in this category of artists, Slug and Ant just put out this amazing new album. And called So Many Other Realities Exist Simultaneously. And Slug, in a really unprecedented, really very special kind of moment, he and I talked through what that album is about, track by track, the story of the album, the arc of the album. He almost never explains his art in that way, and he was really generous to do it with us. There's a conversation with Chris Calico, who went independent, you know what I'm saying, from Strange Music and from his dear friend Tech N9ne, right around the time that I went independent and we launched Travelers Media, you know what I'm saying, after being with my dearest friends, Slug and Ant, you know what I'm saying, in their label and in the label that they're a part of and helped to found. And so Chris Calico and I have a conversation. There's a dope podcast episode, but we had a whole conversation with his wife, where his wife, Crystal, gets on with us, and we talk about mental health and running the business and all of this amazing stuff. So go to brotherali.com in the join section and join the caravan, and let's keep this movement strong.
One of the things that we don't talk about is, for a lot of the artists, none of us are really making a lot of money based on our actual music. There's not much money in music. There's money in selling things, or there's money in, you know, and like me and you, it's like you're teaching. I also teach, and we've found other ways, because we know that just the music itself doesn't really make a person. It's hard to even have a stable life with just music. And so what we end up doing, so many of us, is we're selling our relationship. We're selling the community to corporate interests. And there's big corporations behind this stuff. And so if you were to start saying, like, if these artists did start saying some of the things that you and I and Immortal Technique and Rhapsody and other people are talking about, they're not wrong. It will impact their bottom line in the immediate sense, and their ability to give people turkeys, and they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying to them is it hurts to hear, but also it's like, man, When you say you come in as a soldier, it's like, man, like what people would be signing up for to start saying the things that we also know are true. That it is signing up for a type of combat.
It
You know what I'm
is.
saying?
It is. And it's very important that as people are observing this, that they understand this is an extremely teachable moment for hip hop fans, number one, because as fans, I think we need to reassess if it's an unhealthy attachment that some fans may have to these artists who are now starting to admit, hey, 95% of what I rap about are lies, you know? So as a fan, you have to ask yourself, A, do I have to make sure that I'm not so attached to some of these huge artists that I'm attached to something that is inherently predominantly fictional and made up in terms of the rhymes that are coming out of people's mouths. Secondly, fans have to ask themselves, do I want to support more of what I would like to see in the world, or am I comfortable with supporting something that may not be indicative of how I'm living my life or how I'm even seeking to see the world, you know, turn in that type of direction? Fans, if fans' consumption habits don't change and don't evolve because of moments like this, which have been created, and because of conversations that are now happening in our culture, then nothing will ever change because it's a three-part ecosystem. It's labels, it's, you know, it's industry, it's artists, and it's fans. So there is no industry without artists and fans. So what I'm saying is the industry is always going to be driven by the bottom line and by money. That's going to be that. So some people say, why don't you talk to the industry and talk about the industry? Because I realize that the power is with the people. Because if you have artists and fans who say, as artists, we are going to not cross certain lines in allowing ourselves to become subjected to being pawns of an industry that will incentivize a low moral compass and incentivize messages that's going to make our communities even more deplorable and in worse con ha be in worse conditions. If artists can have that type of resolve, and if fans can say, we're going to support more of the artists who are having a message. Of course, it's not an excuse to say I have a positive message, but my music is corny. You know what I mean? The music can't be corny. Like, music still has to be awesome. It has to be top tier. But if fans can say, we want to support the art to where we can stand next to it and say, yes, that's more of what I want to hear, and that's more of the direction I want to see the world go in. We realize that we have the power, and the industry will have to conform to what we have now said there's more of a demand for. So that's who I feel called to speak to is artists and fans. And I do hope that fans are looking at all of this and not just being entertained, but being educated, you know, being edutained right now to say, wow, we have a very crucial role in this three-part ecosystem that D1 is talking and teaching about. And hopefully fans can become consumer activists.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And that is a big part of it. It's like, you know, people's own addiction to that type of fantasy escapist kind of feeling. You know what I mean? Like it is feeding a deep addiction in people that there are certain things that just have certain energies about them. You know what I mean? That like sex will always have a certain energy about it. And you know, that's just a little different than when you're talking about loving somebody. It's a different type of attractive type of energy. And the also, you know, you're talking about murder, you know what I mean, and anger and like you know, and quick money and things like that. Those things have a certain draw to them, and that's where you and I will understand like that on a spiritual kind of level. Like those are a very specific currency that's used by evil. You know what I mean? That like evil has a pull and a draw of its own because of the fact that we have the propensity for that in our in us. You know what I mean? And so yeah, it's such a big part of it that we're also asking, just even in raising all of these conversations, you're also asking a listener to sit with self and like you know, I understand the desire to escape all of this. I understand the desire to feel powerful. There's like a certain type of projection of power in the music that's like, I can kill people. I can get money for selling drugs. I can have sex with anybody. I can have sex with your woman. Mm. You know what I mean? Almost like that makes it more attractive and appealing. Mm. You know what I mean? This kind of fantasy about power that's connected to something that feels like an escape from what we're all struggling with. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's why it's so important that, like, underneath it all is dope music. You know what I mean? And your music is incredible, man. Like, I just, you know, and it's your music is so full of joy. It's like the other part that, like, man, when we came up, there was like so much collective joy in the music. You know what I mean? Just like the ability to, like, yes, I feel anger. Yes, I feel sadness. Yes, I feel, you know, all these things. But also there's joy. Like, mm-hmm. just where's the part? Where's the part that just like, I don't look like what I've been through?
Amen.
You know what I mean? When I didn't have outside money, I stayed in. Like, man, I relate to that so tough. You know what I mean? Like, man, to me, that's the Muhammad Ali moment of like, I'm pretty. I've been on all these fights. I don't have a scar on my face. I came through all of this without so-and-so. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, man, where's the part where we really actually celebrate? And Rick Ross has a song called Tears of Joy. Mm. Last night I cried tears of joy. What did I do to deserve this? And it's set to gospel music. Mm. And he's got a clip of our brother who was killed on December 4th, just yesterday.
Fred Hampton.
The brother that was Fred Hampton that was killed in Chicago. And it's like, man, these guys know. Like, they know. Mm-hmm. And there's moments where those things come through, just like the fans know on some level. Like, oh man, when a Stevie Wonder record comes on, like, I feel something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When certain Kendrick or certain J. Cole or certain, you know what I'm saying? When Queen Latifah, when UNITY, mm-hmm. who are you calling a bitch? Mm-hmm. Who are you calling a bitch? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's certain records when They Reminisce Over You comes on, or, you know, when certain, you know, when a Rhapsody song comes on, when a Psy-Rock song comes on, Merce, you know, there's like a certain feeling that, like, oh, there is joy. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, just the sacrifices that we make to get to that, you know. And like, man, if we're moguls, if we're really moguls, then like, we should be able to carve something out for all of that. You know what I'm saying? And for somebody like that to have, for the people that are in that space to be able to say, like Sway, for example, you know, like Sway is somebody that I see as being deeply connected and rooted in culture, so that Sway can have you on the show and have that conversation. And then Jim Jones can go up there and he threatened you. And, you know, for Sway to be able to say, like, okay, this is a platform for Jim to also say what he wants to say. But Sway did have some pushback, the same way that Joe Budden's co-host also did. You know what I mean? They're like, okay, I'm also going to balance what you're saying a little bit too. You know what I mean? No, this guy is not a nobody. No, this guy has been doing work. No, D1 it has been successful. You know what I mean? It's incredible. You know, one thing I also think about too is like, I love what you said about hearing our critics and also having those moments of contemplation, because of the fact that, like, inside of us is a spirit. Inside of us is a soul. Inside of us is a heart. Inside of us is an intellect. And also inside of us is an ego. You know what I'm saying? And I've tried so many ways of telling the truth. You know what I mean? I've tried being abrasive. I've tried being lovey-dovey. I've tried, you know what I'm saying? I have tried all of this stuff too, which is why I'm just like, man, I love this guy. Man, get him. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, man, I've always loved you. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, man, in this moment, I'm like, oh, okay, all right. You know? But there is something too that's like, my ego is part of this. My ego is in this mix as well. Mm. And also because of the fact that I am fighting also for myself and for my business and for the fact that I also deserve a seat at this table. You know what I mean? And I also have things that I'm trying to promote. And I also have So I just, you know, and I know that that's one of the things that the spiritual traditions do for us, that Islam, Christianity, that the like, you know what I'm saying? These spiritual traditions also have a way of like, even while I'm stepping forth, fighting the good fight, that fight also has to be going on inside me. And I see that, but I just wonder if you could just say something about what is it, what's it like in your quiet moments when you're also refining your walk as you go? Because I see you doing it.
Yes, sir. I am. I'm making sure to not get caught up in the emotion of any of these moments because myself being a man, myself having an ego, having a side of me that wants to stand up for myself and prove who I am when people may mischaracterize me or mischaracterize my intentions behind my why. There are immense parts of me that want to react accordingly, but I also have to make sure that I maintain a posture that that allows love to be at the core of how I'm moving and that allows people to look on and be able to see that This isn't about a personal endeavor that D is on. This is D being in service to a God that's greater than him and therefore being able to take himself out of the equation when need be. And taking myself out of the equation simply means it's not D1, it's not David that's responding. It's me waiting. Sometimes the best response is to wait until you get some clarity from God on how to best move forward. So there have been a lot of moments through this this back and forth where I have done something or prepared something, maybe a song or maybe prepared a statement where I'm going to speak on this topic or this person, and I've just waited. And I've waited. I have people who I value their wisdom around me, you know, so I seek out their counsel to see what people think. And there have been certain songs that it's like, let me not press upload on this song right now. The song is done, but they may be talking about this or talking about that, but that may not have come from a place of love. That may have come from a place of just wanting to respond and get into the pig pen, so to say. And that takes away from the legitimacy and I think the purity of how I'm seeking to bring about these conversations in our culture. So I've had to catch myself multiple times as recent as two nights ago, less than 48 hours ago, because I just put a new album out. The album is called From the Hood to Harvard, and I did a direct-to-consumer release with this one. So fans are able to name their own price and come to my website, which is d1music.com, D-E-E, the number one, music.com, and then name their own price for the album. It's gone phenomenally well, and I'm so humbled by the support I'm receiving. But there was a bonus track. I added two bonus tracks to the album already because the album talks about my journey from being in the hoods of New Orleans growing up to becoming a fellow at Harvard University as of last year and teaching on hip-hop and whatnot. But I added some bonus tracks that speak to this moment that I found myself in for the past month at this point. And there was one more bonus track that I was about to add based on recent comments and just recent things that have gone on. And I decided not to put it on there. People around me who were like, you know what? That's a fire song. But but what that's going to do in terms of the trajectory of the dialogue that has been sparked is going to take it to a place where now it feels very like etherish, you know, and it seems like oh, you putting out your version of an ether, so to say, and that like what's the end game when it comes to that? And I had to think about it and say, you're right, like it's not about that, because although we see that Jay-Z and Nas were able to form a friendship even after Takeover and Ether, it's definitely something where that's not even the type of spirit that's what I have to fight against, is me being capable of that type of stuff, but me saying, I don't think that is the direction that I want to turn this conversation, because then it becomes all about who's in the pig pen, you know, like sending the most scathing shots across the pig pen. And that's honestly not the core of what I'm in any of this for.
Yeah. Well, brother, I love you. I admire you. I appreciate you. You know, when you see somebody having this type of courage to take this kind of stand and make this kind of statement, I just know the not only the sacrifices that come with it, but also the internal roller coaster of it. You know what I mean? Like just the internal roller coaster of it. And I saw you weeping on a podcast recently, you know, just like it seemed like you were having a moment where you were talking about, you know, the incident in college, being at the basketball court. And it's like, man, I relate so much to these moments where it's like, okay, you now, D1 2023, you're in this moment where you're making these big statements, you're making incredible music, you're having a great time in your career, and you're in these like fights that are very much in the moment. And then something happens that brings your body and your heart back to a moment like that. And you realize like, I'm still the person that happened to. And like, you know, those experiences are the ones that actually are informing what I'm doing right now. You know what I mean? It's like the moment where you stop and you actually remember when my grandmother told me, you know, when you get out there, do this, you know, or, you know, those kind of like pivotal moments. And I really resonate deeply with what I see as a very like sincere, principled position that you're taking and stance that you're making. And I couldn't be more grateful, man. And if there's any way that I can be helpful to you, you know, other than just saying, I see you, I love you, I appreciate you, I feel you. You're not crazy. You're not crazy. You know what I'm saying? Not for this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Maybe for some other stuff, but thank you, man. Thank you. And
yeah, you're not crazy. You're not crazy. And even if there's even if there is this like other, the whole of a human being, like even in the moments where you feel some emotion, you're a human being, you know? So like, even if there are moments of being it's like, man, I recognize and appreciate what you're doing. And I'm just so grateful to you, man.
Thank you, brother. And I, this isn't a shameless plug. It kind of is a shameless plug, but it's not really, because I have always felt, my first name is David. I'm not sure if you knew that or not, but my first name is David.
And I have always,
my entire life, felt like, okay, I see different Goliaths that I am staring in the face, or that are staring my community in the face, or my family in the face. And I've always felt like, your name is David. You're the one that's supposed to figure out how to stand up to that Goliath. So in the music industry, that was the name of my first album, was David and Goliath. It's something where Slingshot David was another album I put out in 2017. And I have always sought to, you know, stand up to these different Goliaths. And so much so that I don't just want to reach adults with that metaphorical message of, we all have a little David in us. We all have Goliaths that we're supposed to stand up against. Yeah. The key is to find your slingshot. Because when you find your slingshot, you will be able to
go ahead, bro.
You will be able to use that slingshot for the purpose God designed it, to defeat those Goliaths. And so much so that this isn't just a high-level hip-hop type of message. This is, I just put a children's book out called David Found His Slingshot. Like, this is me as a kindergartner getting bullied in New Orleans and having a metaphorical Goliath, you know? But at the end of this story, this is something to where you realize that these two brothers become best friends. And to this day, me and this brother are best friends. And it's because I was able to tap into my slingshot, and I was able to utilize that in such a way that God helped to build a bridge where everyone thought, oh no, that's definitely just a cliff, that there's no way that can have an amicable solution to it. So that's one of my gifts, is I am aware of what my slingshots are, and I know how to empower others to find their slingshot. And that's all I'm doing until God calls me home. That's what I'm doing, brother. That's what I'm doing.
Amen. Do we have a plate we can pass around?
Oh, man, chill out, man. Chill out, my brother. Chill out.
No, man. Yo, it also, like, as a Muslim, it means a lot to me that, Islam is so inherent in hip hop, and also in all of Black music, man. The Black Christian tradition and the church is absolutely at the heart and the core. You know, not everybody will understand, but, you know, Black religion is the origin even of Islam in America. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, even Islam in America has a certain connection with the church. You know what I mean? And the Black church, also many of the people that were brought to this country were also Muslim. You know what I mean? And so it's really important to me that voice of the church is in the music. It's extremely important. You know what I mean? That's another thing that's just so important to me about what you do and about what Merce does. And, you know, and I've also seen you have things to say about what's going on in the popular world of Christian music as well.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. This isn't an isolated situation where you're targeting certain people. It's like you're speaking the truth of what you're witnessing and seeing and experiencing across the board. Absolutely. And so, man, it's like, if I wouldn't want to imagine the scene or the world or the community now without you in it, brother. I appreciate you, man. I love you so much. I admire you, man.
I love you too. I love you too, my brother. I admire you as well. Thank you, man. Thank you for this opportunity. This is an opportunity for sure that I don't take lightly.
Special thanks to D1 for being so generous and gracious with his time and with his witness. It's a big day on the day of this recording. His album just came out yesterday, and he is teaching at Tufts University. You know what I'm saying? He actually went to Harvard. His album is called From the Hood to Harvard, and he was on the Harvard campus the day that it came out. And so I'm just very, very grateful to D1 for making the time to talk to us. You know, this isn't the biggest platform that he's able to be on. He's got access to all the platforms, but the fact that he came here means a lot. So go check out that album. Make sure to follow him and support what he's got going on. You know, if you have feedback for him, he's somebody that actually engages. So you can reach out and share thoughts with him. Make sure to like, share, subscribe this podcast. You know what I'm saying? It really goes a long way. You know, we have supporters, we have sponsors. We're not connected to a big media outlet. Everything that we're connected to is community stuff that's driven by people. So like, share, subscribe. Go to brotherali.com. Check out the event section. You can see all the tours and the shows that we got coming up. Don't miss them. They've been really dope. Go to that merch section too, because I know this is a holiday time for people. So everything is discounted if you want to give gifts. They also ship out really quickly. Special thanks and much love to Mansoor Panawala and Amna Mirza and all the people that have ever helped with this podcast. Shout out to you for listening. Shout out to the people that listen and give me feedback every week. Aida Rashid and Khalees Rashad and Mad Son, Mike Madison, Chaplain Shane. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that I hear from. Shout out to my man, Omar B, you know what I'm saying, from New Jersey. Yeah, so many incredible people listen and give us feedback. We love you all. We appreciate you all. Travelers Podcast is produced by Brendan Kelly, a.k.a. BK1. It's a production of Travelers Media. We hope to see you next week. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.